The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Take it away, Dwayne.
Thank you, Hugh. Welcome, America. It is Dwayne Patterson filling in for Hugh all this week. Good to have you here. Lots and lots and lots of stuff in the news today. We will be taking your phone calls in a little while. I will tell you what that's all about. But let me do the news because there is a ton of it to digest. Just a quick overview for the rundown. Big piece in the New York Times today by Adam Entis, Julian Barnes, and Adam Goldman. Intelligence suggests that a pro-Ukrainian group has now is responsible for sabotaging the Nord Stream pipeline, U.S. officials say. New intelligence reviewed by U.S. officials suggests that a pro-Ukrainian group carried out the attack on the Nord Stream pipelines last year, a step toward determining responsibility for an act of sabotage that has confounded investigators on both sides of the Atlantic for months. Very long piece, lots of speculation, lots of evidence pointing in that direction. Not entirely conclusive, but it's we're starting to get a handle on who might be responsible for doing that. The people at Fox News have come out with a piece today. They have now officially entered the "What if Joe Biden can't make it" sweepstakes. Of course, earlier in the week and late last week, we saw different stories coming out saying that maybe J.B. Pritzker of Illinois might be the SOS candidate. There was a New York Times piece on that. And a lot of different media outlets have come up with different speculation as to who might be the fallback plan, because most people in the bubble know that Kamala Harris is not that person. And with increasing obviousness, it's looking like Pete Buttigieg is not that person. So they're having to look outside a little bit in case all else fails and Joe Biden can't answer the bell. Fox News's entry, Michelle Obama for 2024. Yes, I'm serious. They're talking about, hey, could she, would she could stand up a campaign pretty quick. She could raise money pretty quick. She's got name ID. She's got everything you could possibly want in a candidate if Joe Biden can't go. The only catch to it is that Michelle Obama has shown exactly zero interest at all for wanting to do a job like that. But that's what Fox News thinks is a possibility. Joe Biden's problems continue on the nomination front. There was an embattled FCC, Federal Communications Commission chair, named Gigi Son, who I have played lots of cuts from her confirmation hearing. She had two or three different rounds on my after show, which is part of the Grand Old Pod in the Universe for subscribers. A lot of those cuts are long-form Senate confirmation hearings, 3, 4, sometimes 5-minute cuts. They're gold when you can do long-form radio. It's harder to do when you have normal commercial breaks and things like that. But the bottom line is this was a nomination that was doomed to fail. Why? Because it was a nomination that was controversial enough that even some Democrats were signaling, I can't really go with this, like Joe Manchin and John Tester and others were thinking, I don't want to go to the mattresses for this nominee. Joe Manchin is against it. Dianne Feinstein is unable to vote. She is dealing with a case of shingles. She has been hospitalized in San Francisco as of late. She's not expected to be back in D.C. for at least a month, not able to vote. Of course, John Fetterman is dealing with effects of depression caused by the stroke that he had last year on the campaign trail. He has been unable to carry out his duties in the Senate, unable to vote. So Chuck Schumer simply does not have the votes to put this nomination through. And after all of the delays and after all the controversies have piled up and no prospects, Gigi San officially pulled her name from consideration. She is no longer there. The thing that's fascinating about that story is Kevin Collier over at NBC News, who did the piece for NBC News on this nomination failing. He says that the whole coverage of her downfall is, in parens, unsurprisingly downplaying the substantive reasoning behind partisan opposition to San. It's worth noting that she was objectively one of the worst nominees Biden could have produced. That's actually Matt Whitlock. Kevin Collier says, confirming that consumer advocate Gigi San has withdrawn her 20-month candidacy to join the FCC. She faced the most intense bad faith and often outright homophobic campaign against a nominee in the agency's history. That, of course, is absolute poppycock. And that's not reportage. That's not journalism. That's pretty partisan, actually, for a quote-unquote reporter for NBC News. The bottom line is, as the senators on the committee have outlined over the last two or three confirmation hearings, she has an entire public record on social media and other places saying the most extreme rhetorical things at Republicans. And she's supposed to be in a nonpartisan position of FCC chair overseeing what speech looks like on the public airwaves. That wasn't going to happen. It wasn't going to happen anytime soon. And I'm glad that is now gone. In Virginia, Jerry Dunleavy writing in the Washington Examiner, a top U.S. high school, this would be the Thomas Jefferson High School for Science and Technology, part of the Fairfax County public school system, has collaborated with the Chinese state military. That's not a good thing. When one of our top STEM schools in the country is now taking money and working with the CCP, that's not typically a really good news story. Gretchen Whitmer is in the news again, the governor, the beleaguered governor of Michigan. Of course, a ice storm and severe winter weather worked its way across the country over the last week, week and a half. Was Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan to help oversee the damage of the storm and the cleanup from the storm? Why, no. No, she wasn't. You'll never guess where she was. Right down the road from me, a piece, down in sunny San Diego, California. But that's not what the big story of the day. The big story that everybody's talking about is January 6th. And not because of anything that came out of the committee. No, why it's in the news is because Tucker Carlson was given access to all of the unused footage that the January 6th committee did not seem fit to let the American people see in their rump committee hearings. So Kevin McCarthy, the Speaker of the House, turned around and gave a lot of that material to Tucker Carlson, who spent about a week digesting it and has been putting it on the airwaves on Fox the last couple nights. And the media, the Beltway complex, is absolutely having a meltdown, along with elected Democrats. Chuck Schumer, in a press conference, the leader of the Senate, said this, cut number two.
These lies continue tonight. Rupert Murdoch, who has admitted they were lies and said he regretted it, has a special obligation to stop Tucker Carlson from going on tonight, now that he's seen how he has perverted and slimed the truth, and from letting him go on again and again and again. Not because their views deserve such opprobrium, but because our democracy depends on it.
Our democracy depends on not showing you what happened and showing you the rest of the story. Look, I'm going to cut this down to the chase here because we're short on time. The person most responsible for what the selective outrage is because of why this got aired the way it did all falls in the lap of Nancy Pelosi. If she would have done a select committee the way the Congress has done every select committee outside of this one in its history, she would have let Kevin McCarthy as minority leader, then minority leader, staff the January 6th Select Committee with whoever he wanted, like Jim Banks and Jim Jordan. She didn't. She chose to make it a rump committee. She plucked who she wanted to be on that committee so that it had its desired outcome. They were just looking for what evidence supported it and forget everything else. And we don't want you to see what else there is. That's not how you run trials. That's not how you run hearings. That's not how you get to the truth. That's how you get to a predetermined outcome and an agenda. I'll have more on that after the break. Dwayne Patterson in for Hugh Hewitt. Again, you can get mad at Fox if you're on the left, but if you really want to be angry, get angry at Nancy Pelosi, because this could have been done all within the committee under normal business. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Dwayne Patterson in for Hugh Hewitt, wrapping up hour two of the Hugh Hewitt Show today, joined as I am on most weeks, usually in the producer's chair, but this time in the host chair, by Olivia Beavers, who is a phenomenal reporter over at Politico. You can read her online at Politico or on Twitter. You can see some stuff that she puts up there as well, at @Olivia_Beavers. Hello, Olivia. Good to have you here. How are you?
Hey, Dwayne. Good to join you.
So we're going to get to your piece, which is a very fun piece, if not kind of sad and pathetic. But we're going to get to the George Santos piece in a minute, because there's lots in there that it's very good reporting, even though it's kind of, you know, kicking my side when they're down a little bit. But that's fine. But there's a couple other things that are going to be happening. And since you're the congressional reporter extraordinaire for Politico, there's two different sets of oversight hearings that are going to take place in the next week that I want to see if you're going to be plugged into or reporting on or can give us any detail of what we might expect. One of those is the subcommittee to probe the COVID-19 pandemic. That's supposed to be in the offing next week. And the other one is the House Foreign Affairs Committee is going to be looking at Joe Biden's handling of Afghanistan and the pullout. Now, both of those are of great interest to me and of this audience. Do you have any insight as to what that may look like, who some witnesses might be, and what we can expect?
Well, yes, but I actually think the Foreign Affairs Committee one is supposed to be today,
morning.
Just went and double checked myself, but they have a series of different types of people. So they have people who were specialists in the military, in the U.S. Army. They have people who were part of sort of evacuation groups that were going back and trying to get Americans and U.S. allies out. When there sort of seemed like this stall at times from the Biden administration to admit that there were Americans left behind. So that would be like the task force pineapple sort of founder and people. And then you have, Allied Airlift 21 as well. So I think that they're going to be talking a lot about the efforts to get people back home.
Great.
Even when the messaging from the White House was different. And I remember writing stories about it at the time, because there was some frustration on my end that story just at some point sort of disappeared from the press's, you know, focus. And I was like, no, this is a really big deal. So I remember talking to Task Force Argos and the efforts to get people back home. There's also another one, and it wasn't mentioned, there's a worldwide threats hearing this morning as well. So it's going to be a busy morning. You have the CIA director, the FBI director, the heads of the DNI, DIA, and NSA all coming in to testify today. So we might be able to see sort of what the national security landscape is going to look like as well.
Do you know if on the witness list, maybe not in today's hearing, but somewhere in this overall focus, are they going to call John Ondrasik of Five for Fighting? Because he was one of the first guys actually on this and was very instrumental in trying to call out and get people connected and plugged into getting people out of there that were stranded and left behind.
Off the top of my head, I don't know, but I will go and ask around, because I think that this is just sort of the start of what they want to do, is paint a picture about how the evacuation went. And going from where it started is definitely, you know, in their best interest to pull that sort of story and pull that yarn. And I wanted to give two quick updates, because I know these are also committees that Hugh loves to talk about a lot. one thing to watch for the FBI's weaponization committee is they've had a letter out seeking the testimony of 16 FBI officials. If I understand it correctly, that deadline is today. And if they don't hear back, expect for, you know, Jim Jordan to start working on subpoenas.
You betcha. You betcha. Absolutely. Yep. That's going to be a lot of fun. You said there was another update too?
Yes. And, you know, for the Select China Committee, I know that McCarthy and Jeffries met with the full panel yesterday. And so that's sort of talking about their plans moving forward and reaffirming from both the two House leaders that they plan to keep this committee bipartisan, which is something that Chairman Gallagher has made a huge emphasis about.
That's going to be fascinating to follow, too. Now, very quickly, before we jump to the Santos piece, Chuck Schumer, in a press conference yesterday, signaled that he was basically sawing off the rest of the limb underneath the House progressives after the D.C. crime bill fiasco. How angry are the House Democrats in total at how Joe Biden treated them?
My understanding and from conversations, they're really frustrated. They feel like they had a complete flip-flop and they were sort of the ones who walked the plank and just kind of got pushed off in that sort of situation of saying, okay, well, President Biden's not going to support it. Oh, he is supporting this GOP resolution. So they're pretty pissed off.
Okay. Biggest takeaway from the Santos piece. We got about 30 seconds. What's the biggest takeaway? It's a great piece. Everybody should go to Politico and read it. Olivia Beavers. What is the biggest takeaway?
The biggest takeaway is how fierce these new New York Republicans are in trying to separate themselves from Santos, from legislation, calling for him to resign, all the above. And then it's just spilling out into the public with this war of words. And Santos isn't taking it quietly. So it's becoming very dramatic.
Yeah, it is. It's a great piece, Olivia. It really is. It's kind of sad, but it's great reporting. Olivia Beavers, at Olivia_Beavers. Thank you very much. Dwayne Patterson in for you.
Friends, 2022 is history. But have you thought about what you will do in 2023? What will you do to make yourself better than last year? I have a challenge for you. Resolve to become a better educated citizen. Look, every year is a new opportunity, so I have a great way for you to make the most of this one. Our good friends at Hillsdale College have made their online courses free. They're all amazing, and they're free to all who wish to learn. My challenge to you, take just one. You can discover the beauty of the Bible in the Genesis story, study the writings of C.S. Lewis, or explore the true meaning of America in Constitution 101. There are many more to choose from, and these are all self-paced, free courses featuring Hillsdale faculty and scholars. So visit hughforhillsdale.com, that's hughforhillsdale.com, and just pick one of the more than 30 free Hillsdale courses. I hope you accept my challenge. Pick whichever course you'd like and resolve to be a more educated American in 2023. Go to hughforhillsdale.com. Start your free course today.
Thank you, Hugh. Hour 3 of the Hugh Hewitt Show is straight ahead. Dwayne Patterson filling in for Hugh this week. Joined at this time when we are lucky by Garrity the Indispensable, at Jim Garrity at Twitter. You can read Jim, the National Review senior political correspondent, and his missives over there pretty much all day, every day. Jim, I got 4 things for you, and a couple of them you're expecting, a couple of them you should be expecting. Number one, let me posit my theory on the Tucker J6 fury that is enveloping D.C. and see if you think I'm wrong. This is something that we would have had, this conversation would have been had Nancy Pelosi allowed Kevin McCarthy to put the people he wanted on the committee when the committee was stood up. And we would have had some of this contra narrative video as part of the hearings, part of the testimony, maybe in minority press conferences from the committee. But this wouldn't have all been new stuff to all of us, and it wouldn't have been having to go through Tucker Carlson and Fox News had Nancy Pelosi not screwed the pooch with the committee in the first place.
Dwayne, I think that is largely correct. I think that, you know, if there had been Jim Jordan or other Republicans not named Liz Cheney, then you would have seen more arguments like this. It would not have been a clean narrative coming out of the 9/11, out of the January 6th commission. Having said that, I think what we're seeing here is basically the argument a lot of Republicans would like to see. A great many people on the right know that January 6th was bad and an embarrassment. And they're very eager to hear anything that would mitigate how bad it was or how much of an embarrassment it was. You know, Dwayne, I'm sure you've heard people say, oh, you know, really it was Antifa, you know, the infiltrators who did it. Or they'll say, oh, it was FBI informants that, you know, stirred everything up. Or they'll say, well, actually it happened, but it was just a protest that got out of control. It wasn't that bad, et cetera.
Right.
So along comes Tucker Carlson and says, aha, I've looked at all these previously unreleased videos, and it turns out everything you've heard was wrong. Look, the police acted like tour guides in this video. And here, Q Shaman looks on violent. And we're just going to hand wave away. You know, oh, it was just, you know, like people thought they were getting a tour. Say, Dwayne, you've been to the Capitol a bunch of times. Do you get to take away the podiums?
No. And yeah. I haven't changed my mind on it at all. I think the people that went into that building should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. They should have due process, serve whatever time they've got to serve, and get on with their life and be done with the thing.
Yeah. There's a lot of people on the right are very going to eagerly embrace anything Tucker Carlson puts out there.
But here's my question.
It reassures them that this wasn't quite so bad and it wasn't quite so embarrassing.
But here's my question. Does it really change anybody's opinion that didn't already, that had an opinion already going in, one side or the other?
I do think this does create this new momentum amongst certain conservatives and likely amongst those who want to run for president, to make that Trump-esque argument of, oh, it wasn't that bad. Oh, it really wasn't. You know, this was just it was mostly peaceful, to use that ironic phrase from the description of the George Floyd riots.
And that's fair. I think where you and I probably disagree is my conjecture is that the people that would come down after Tucker Carlson reports with that viewpoint kind of went into the Tucker Carlson with that viewpoint, and this was just justification for it.
The problem is that it's a nonsensical argument. It was still people smearing feces on the walls.
I get it. Now, something that I think we can totally agree on is Corinne Jean-Pierre is the absolute worst at this. Here is just a bit of Corinne Jean-Pierre at the White House press briefing yesterday. Jacob, cut number 17, please.
Well, let's be very clear. Let me take on the drug part here, because since you brought this up, because of the work that this president has done, because of what we've done specifically on fentanyl at the border, it's at historic levels.
Jim Garrity, I don't think that's quite true.
No, it's not. By every measure,
measure,
it's about as bad as it's ever been, and at the worst. I mean, maybe you know there are some numbers that are going to forthcome that'll show some slight improvement or something, but no. Here's the thing. What she wanted to say was that the amount seized was at its highest, which you can point to as something of a victory, but more, you're seizing more because more is coming over the border. There's more opportunities to get it. Your odds of searching a random truck or package coming over the border and finding fentanyl are much higher because it's coming over in such, you know, huge amounts. I mentioned that in the corner yesterday, and I'm writing today about this in the Morning Jolt about this purported shift on detaining migrant families. The idea that maybe after denouncing the policy when Trump did it, Biden is reportedly thinking about bringing it back. And I think what it demonstrates, one, is that actually they're genuinely worried about the border as an issue in 2024. It didn't hurt them in the midterms as much as they thought it was, but they know this is seen as a big federal presidential level issue. Trump's out there. Trump's going to be beating the drum on this. But I think any Republican is going to be saying you have failed in your duty to protect the country. And all the fentanyl overdoses are a consequence of that failure to stop this, you know, garbage from coming into our country, this poison. And it's going to resonate a great deal. So you have two things you can do. You can flip-flop and go back to the Trump policies and hope nobody notices. And, of course, people will notice. Or you can insist that it's not really that bad. And I think that was the Corinne Jean-Pierre strategy yesterday, and it unsurprisingly did not work.
Of course it's not going to work. Another piece, talking, by the way, with Jim Garrity of National Review, Dwayne Patterson filling in for Hugh. There was a piece that I had completely fallen off my radar because I'm so over it, but I saw this piece you wrote in National Review yesterday, And it just was laugh out loud funny. And that is the mayor of New York City, Eric Adams, now has a different opinion about masking and its efficaciousness and its appropriateness in public, which seems to differ than what the governor of his state thinks and what his previous mayor thinks and what the previous governor thinks and every leftist collectivist authoritarian in New York thinks. Jim Garrity, what's the deal with masks now?
Sure.
Because I'm missing the memo.
If I had written this in a satirical novel like The Weed Agency, the editor probably would have said, come on, that's too ridiculous.
No. Uh-huh.
And what it is that, look, unsurprisingly, New York's got a real crime problem, and it's getting worse. And what one of the things is people go in and they rob the stores, they rob the bodegas, not just with the shoplifting people have probably seen on video or the smash-and-grab type things, but, you know, armed robbery and things like that. And one of the things they're doing is they're wearing masks. And, of course, you come into the store, you know, pre-COVID, if you came into a store wearing a mask, everybody knew that was, you know.
We have problems. We have trouble in River City at that point.
Yeah, at that point, you're like, oh, the guy's coming in here to rob me. And, you know, when you're wearing a mask, of course, any, you know, closed circuit television or any other way you have of recording the robbery, it's much less useful of the guy. So Eric Adams, recognizing this problem, a former cop, now mayor, has said he would like everyone to, entering a store, if you're wearing a mask, you know, there are still people out there who are wearing masks. Some people are genuinely immunocompromised and they've got good reason to do so. You have to take your mask off before you get into the store. Show show your face to the store owner, the person behind the counter, and then proceed and continue shopping. Now, so in a way, we've gone from, yes, you absolutely must wear your mask, to, okay, it's not, to now, you absolutely must, or at least the mayor is requesting you take off your mask, even if you really, really want to keep it on. So my suggestion, Dwayne, was that everybody should switch sides. Everybody who refused to wear a mask and thought that the city policies were fascistic and wrong, well, I think they should now say, no, I'm going to put on a mask, and I'm not going to take it off. You can't make me. I'm going to go in. I'm going to keep my mask on, even though I hate wearing a mask. And everybody who previously had been like, no, all those Karens out there said you have to wear a mask. Well, now I think they should be walking around saying, no, you have to take off the mask. Everybody should. It's the same fight, but everybody switch sides.
It's just beyond parody at this point. Quickly, about 30 seconds. In the Wall Street Journal today, there's a piece on Twitter and the Federal Trade Commission in 12 letters sent to Twitter and its lawyers since Mr. Musk's October 27 takeover. The FTC also asked the company to, quote, identify all journalists, end quote. Jim, I thought that Ron DeSantis was the authoritarians here.
Yeah, he had one nut job state legislator introduce that legislation. And I had people telling me, you know, Jim, you're going to have to be careful. Ron DeSantis is going to make you have to register if you want to write about him. Ron DeSantis never supported that legislation. But, you know, look, whatever fits the narrative, I suppose.
Apparently so. Jim Garrity, get the morning jolt. Go over to nationalreview.com, at Jim Garrity on Twitter. Thanks a lot, Garrity the Indispensable. Dwayne Patterson in for Hugh. We'll be back right after this. 33 minutes past the hour. C.J. Box is my guest, novelist extraordinaire. He's the author of the wildly successful Joe Pickett series of books, including the most recent one, Stormwatch. And he's also got a second series that I don't think he ever intended for it to become a series. They were really meant to be standalone books, but it turned into the Cody Hoyt, which turned into the Cassie Duell series of books, the latest being Treasure State. And CJ, good to have you back. Welcome.
Thanks for having me back, Dwayne. I appreciate it.
Now, you didn't hear the music because you're on the video feed, and we can't play the music over the video feed, but I was playing Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, 15 Feet of Pure White Snow, which
good.
Which fiction becomes reality in Wyoming, does it not, over the past couple of weeks?
It does. It does. It does in the book, and then it has in real life. Yeah. I just finished the national part of the tour on Sunday night, and drove home to Wyoming from Denver, and made it within 200 yards of my house before I got stuck and had to hike the rest of the way.
Were you in a truck? Did you lose like the equivalent of the Joe Pickett truck in the snow?
I did it exactly like that. Yeah, I had to go out the next day in a skid steer and pull my truck out.
Yep. That is reflected in the book, among other things. I'm not going to divulge a lot of secrets, or I'm not going to divulge a lot of stuff. And I thought I was going to spend, when we booked this, I thought I was going to spend virtually all of my time on the Pickett book, because it was, the most recent thing, and that's what I thought we were going to talk about. But the people at McMillan threw a curveball at me yesterday, and I am totally hook, line, and sinker picked up on this thing. We'll cover that in just a minute too, but let's get okay. let's get to Stormwatch first, and then we'll shift over to Treasure State. First of all, the way you can tell how long it takes for a year to pass can now be measured in seasons of Pickett. When is season two going to be seen by us?
On the TV show on Paramount Plus, we don't have a firm date yet, but it's going to be in just a couple of months. We do have that. We're excited about season two. When I say we, I'm not the royal we, it's my wife and I.
Right.
Loved season one. And so did my family. And it was the number three show on Paramount Plus, so it's done very well.
Are they still excited for
season two?
Are they still shooting the back end of it, or is season two completely in the can, waiting to drop?
It's in the can and has been for quite a while. They finished up filming, I believe, in September in Calgary.
Do they have orders for a season three, and when would they start shooting that?
They have not. I think they want to see how season two does before they do.
Season two will be a smash. Season one was terrific. Season one was great.
Thanks. Yeah, we're optimistic.
Okay, let's get to some of the things in the book quickly. I want to cover the concept of the CCP and their infiltration into the university system. How did that make its way into Wyoming and a Joe Pickett book? And is there more that you think can be fleshed out of that subject, or you think he pretty much tapped that out in this book?
Well, I don't know if there can be more, but the impetus of that storyline, like a lot of storylines, honestly, Dwayne, come from listening to the Hugh Hewitt show, following the news. I was kind of horrified and surprised a couple of years ago to find out how far that CCP has reached into, especially academia in the U.S. And I wanted to put that, just like I always do, kind of adjusted. The last place you would expect any kind of infiltration or influence would be in a state like Wyoming.
There is some sensitive stuff in Wyoming universities, is there not?
There is, because it's known for being a leader in energy development and fracking, as well as cryptocurrency.
There is also, life imitates art, art imitates life, real news, trying to predict what real news is going to be. We see in the news in the last couple of days and weeks about domestic terrorism and how dangerous domestic terrorism is on the right. We saw a piece in The Atlantic that, there's dangerous rhetoric and extremism on both the left and the right. But because of it's from The Atlantic, the right's got to clearly be 100 times worse. But in the Stormwatch book, you've got a group called the Keystoners. And I'm looking around going, Keystoners, they got to be here somewhere. Tell us about the Keystoners.
Well, it's a fictional group, but it's based on what could be reality. It's about a bunch of disaffected oil field workers and oil supply service people who are all laid off because of a certain pipeline that didn't go forward. So they don't have much to do. They're bitter. They get together. They're very anti-government to begin with. They're a little wacky, but they and some others try to recruit Nate Romanowski to their side in what they hope will be a secessionist movement so that Wyoming can join Texas and other states. Wholly fictional at this point, But those things always bubble up in the Mountain West, where so much there's so much federal land and there's so much influence by the federal government.
There is a lot of hostility in C.J. Box's Wyoming between local and state government and the feds. There is an appearance by a couple of FBI agents named Agents Scott and Fetterman. And it just made me laugh out loud because, oh, I don't know where those names might have popped up from, C.J. Box.
You know, sometimes I'm prescient. Sometimes I totally misread the situation. And at the time I was writing the book, I thought, by the time this book comes out, no one will remember the name Fetterman or where it came from.
Because there's no chance he could get elected. There's no chance he could get elected. Yeah, I know.
Yes, that's right. I've done this before. I've tried to guess, and I've guessed wrong.
It is often said that a good novel is one that tells a good, fun, entertaining story, but teaches you something along the way or teaches you a few things along the way. I am still trying to get up to speed on what Bitcoin is, how it works, how it operates. I learned a lot about the back end of what Bitcoin's about that I never knew was a thing, including how it's processed and, you know, how the transactions are processed and how the computers that process those transactions are powered. You want to explain that without divulging too much of the plot, CJ?
Oh, sure. And it's something, it's not, I'm not a Bitcoin expert or cryptocurrency expert by any means, but I got interested in the subject when I found out that there were a lot of independent little facilities going up, sometimes in very remote areas in the Rocky Mountains. They put a building on top of an old capped oil and gas well to draw that power and put a turbine in it and then fill the building full of computers running white hot to mine cryptocurrency. It's based on a true thing. I met a guy who manufactures those facilities. And I just thought it was.
Have you actually seen one? Did you go actually see one in operation?
Yep, I went inside, and I went inside the facility as it was being manufactured, and then saw one in the field in the middle of nowhere.
Wow!
So it doesn't require outside power. The amount of power that's required to mine cryptocurrency, I saw one statistic.
It's a lot.
I was researching it. It's equivalent to all the appliances running in the United States at the same time.
it's more than you would think. It's actually quite a bit.
Yes, it is.
One last thing on the book, just because it was just another laugh out loud. Probably the funniest line, at least to me, from where I sit and doing what I do. The funniest line in Stormwatch. Quote, "Judge Hewitt doesn't know technology," end quote. Man, if there's a truer line that CJ Box has written, I have not read it yet. I have lived that for 23 years. Stormwatch, it's a phenomenal read, CJ. It's not long range. I still think that's the one by which all other CJ Box books are measured. I don't know why. I just happen to like this one a lot better. At least the first couple hundred pages worth, and then it kind of falls off from there, but you know, I digress.
I think of it as the Dwayne Patterson book in my mind.
It could have been the first of a third series is what it really could have been, but you know,
yeah,
I digress. Okay, we got to shift to Treasure State because I didn't think we were going to talk about this at all. Except that we'll talk about what the news is on it in a second, but give people the premise or the subplot that led to what McMillan is doing with it, and then we'll talk about it.
Sure. Treasure State is a Cassie Duell book, not a Joe Pickett book. Cassie Duell is a Montana private investigator. And in the book, there's a couple of plots going on, but the main one is she is actually hired by a guy who claims to have written a treasure hunt poem. And he hires her in secret to try to discover his identity, figuring out if Cassie can figure out who he is, then the treasure hunters can figure out who he is. And it's all based, again, on a true story for a guy named Forrest Fenn, who for 5 years kept the Mountain West on tenterhooks while people tried to figure out where the treasure that he buried was. And five people died in the search for it. So it's based on that. The treasure was eventually found. It wasn't a hoax after all, but it sure captivated a lot of people.
And it's not a hoax that we actually have a true treasure hunt underway. CJ, can you stick around for the break? I want to talk to you for like 3 more minutes. Can you hold over the break or do you have to run?
Nope. I'm just sitting here looking at the snow.
Okay. We'll come back with CJ Box right after the break because we actually have an actual treasure hunt underway, a bounty and a mystery to solve. And I am totally hooked. I now have to go back and read every one of these books over again to try to figure out what this riddle is. More after the break. Dwayne Patterson in for Hugh. We'll be back with CJ Box in a second.
We're so happy in my blue heaven.
Welcome back, America. My Blue Heaven by Frank Sinatra. From Bozeman to the Bitterroots, Cassie Duell travels, and so should you, clever reader, this mystery to unravel. Allow me to introduce myself. I've been here from the beginning, back before the Lizard King made his first dark killing. Crack open any Duell book. I'm in almost every chapter. But rarely mentioned by my name, do you see who you're after? Some might call me country, but in Montana it's true. My grandeur is the talk of cities, and I'm often very blue. You'll see my name in local bars and restaurants downtown, but in the plains and the mountains I gain my high renown. To conclude this novel riddle, I'll give you one more clue. You'll find me deep in Treasure State. Will I find you there too? If you can solve the mystery, the person or the thing that this mystery is pointing to, and you go to CJ Box's Twitter page, which is at CJ Box Author, there's a link that will take you to Macmillan, his publisher, and there is a contest. There's a form you can fill out. You can get a signed copy of Treasure State. CJ Box, the big question to me, I will give you total props for all time if you can tell me that this was all part of the master plan, that you wrote the whole series of books thinking there was going to be this at some point, and that this wasn't just some really smart person at Macmillan who came up with a stunt.
Well, Dwayne, I have to say, as usual, it wasn't part of the master plan.
Ah, darn it.
It is. It is a smart person at the publisher.
Oh, it's
young guy.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant.
Came up with this idea, and I thought it was fantastic as well. And he put it out in kind of a limited way when Treasure State came out last September.
Right.
And now with the paperback about ready to come out, they've decided to do it a little more on a bigger scale. And I think it's a hoot. I think it's fun.
Did you know what he was talking about when he did the riddle? I mean, did he try to stump you with the riddle?
He did. Yeah, we were.
Did you know what it was?
In New York. I did. Immediately.
Hmm. Well, that's disturbing. Because I've read every one of these books, too. I should know this, and I don't. Now, I don't care about the contest. I mean, Chuck, you and I are friends. If I wanted a signed copy of the book, I'd say, hey, Chuck, I need a signed copy of the book, and I'd have one. So I don't care about winning the contest, but it frosts me that I don't know this off the top of my head.
When this is over, I will DM you the answer, and you'll just smack your head and say it was there all along.
Well, no, you're not going to do that. I'm going to go read the books, and I'm going to have to figure it out. So what comes next? This coming year is every year is a picket year, but every other year is a Duell book. So we've only got one book to expect this coming year.
That's right. And I'm about a third done with the next Joe Pickett book. I'm not sure when the next Cassie Duell book will be. It may be a couple of years. It's just, you know, that pace of a book and a half a year is pretty tough. But
oh, I don't know how you did it. That's crazy to me that you were able to be that prolific. But I commend you for doing it as much as you did. CJ, thank you very much for sticking over the break. It's always a hoot talking to you. We've been friends for a long time off air as well as on air, and the emails we have traded back and forth are kind of legendary amongst our own little circles here. So
that's right.
I look forward to the next thing and trying to outguess the plot line yet again and failing miserably. But in the meantime, I've now got to go backwards and figure out what this riddle is. Thanks, Chuck.
Oh, well, thank you, Dwayne. And, you know, there's no reviews that I look forward to more every book than yours. Well, seriously.
I appreciate that. Someday we may try to put those out there somewhere just to be fun with it. But anyway, CJ Box, all things CJ Box, at CJ Box author, or you can go to cjbox.net is the website. And by the way, Chuck, get your people to put this riddle thing, put it up on the website too. I don't think it's there as of this morning. It needs to be.
It does need to be. Yep, I agree.
Thanks, Chuck. I appreciate it. We will talk down the road. I got to go back and read. I got to read the bitter roots all over. I got to read all this stuff again. Thanks, Chuck. See ya. Bye. I want to close out by reminding you about our Food for the Poor campaign. Look, the border is a disaster, right? I mean, Corinne Jean-Pierre, I've got a couple more cuts of video that we could play talking about how just nonsensical border policy is and how many people are still streaming across. You can mitigate the problem in large parts by keeping people in their countries of origin, like what goes on in Honduras. Adam, let's play that cut.
Two-thirds of the country is in a food crisis. We are talking of 400,000 small producers' families, and each family has at least five members. There are 3.2 million Hondurans living in a situation of poverty and hunger.
Please help. 855-359-HOPE, 855-359-4673, or text HUE to 91999. It makes all the difference in the world to these people. HUE to 91999. Please do it today. Dwayne Patterson in for HUE. We'll be back tomorrow for the Thursday edition of the HUE Youth Show. Thanks, everybody. See ya.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.